Hello and welcome to the first post-match from the Rookery End of the season, the 14th season. And it got off to a great start, a triumphant start for the Hornets with a 4-0 home win over QPR, who lived up to the nickname we gave it because one of the guys at school, James, he won't be listening. He supported QPR and we used to call it Quarter Pound of Rubbish. And they were a quarter pound of rubbish, but Watford weren't. And we'll discuss Watford.
Just a quarter pound of rubbish.
Well, they were not good at all. But we're going to talk about the game. And from the recruit, this Tuesday morning, probably when you're listening to this, because that's when our podcast is going to be out this year, gives us a free weekend, time to think, time to dwell, time to form our ideas a little bit easier. And then we'll gather on a Monday as we are now. And we'll be out on a Tuesday with me. Today is Mike.
Chuck for Tatsy. All right. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good, Michael. We will be discussing him for sure. And also Jason.
Hello. That's a very good song, Mike. But I must admit, the one song that I thought we should have sung on Saturday that we didn't, I was very disappointed that we didn't, was You're Supposed to Be at Home.
We did get to sing We Are Top of the League, so We Are Top of the League, which was bizarre but great.
There was a QPR fan in the home end, I noticed.
There was, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's not a surprise. So let's go through this, guys. You know, let's get an overall feeling, let's say, of the game itself. But the first addition, the first look at what is Val Ball. Jason, what did you see in Val Ball?
Intention, I think, was the first big thing. Just for the last season plus, have we really understood what each of the successive head coaches slash managers have been trying to do? Mike shaking his head. Whereas I think it was very clear what was intended, starting from the very back with our new captain, Mr. Backman, who was, I'd like to see his heat map, because he was very, very high up the pitch, wasn't he? And whilst
I know where my heat map was, watching him play up that far up the pitch, it was underneath my armpits, yeah. Sweating. And elsewhere. But
exactly.
And
I think a few of us said we were a bit concerned and a bit uncomfortable with him playing as a sweeper. And it probably will catch us out against better teams. But the intention of that was good. And you could see it was sort of setting the standard from the base, as it were. And just that first thing, that sort of desire to play high up the pitch, to press high, was good. And then when we had the ball, the passing was more confident, I thought, across the team, more assured. And again, the intention was there. There was no sort of dilly-dallying on the ball when the passes were firm. And generally, I thought better. Our passing has not been great. Again, last couple of seasons, it looked pretty good, I thought, on Saturday. And part of that, I think, was down to the fact that we had players finding space. And again, that could have been the quality of the opposition. They might have found it easier because they were sort of standing off a bit. But the movement was good. The movement, the fullbacks, wingbacks, whatever they were playing, when they were moving forward sort of inside. The centre mids were finding some of the channels outside. Sierrauta, or should we call him Cisco Stones, dropping into the back line when needed, which allowed the other centre backs to move forward with the ball if they had the ball. Or he was pushing forward, as we saw for, which one was it, the fourth goal? I lost count already. The fourth goal where he got the assist, where he was pushing forward in a position you wouldn't normally find him. And again, back to the midfield, as I said, they were looking to go wide, but also breaking through the lines. And the first goal was a sort of a good example of that, where Dele Bashiru's made that run beyond the front men.
That goal, Mike, could not have been any better, I think, in terms of timing,
yeah. In
terms of how it came about. You said you felt it. And I was a bit iffy about it. At the live event last Thursday, everybody was not overly cautious, but there was definitely an element of, we've been burnt, and we need something to help us get over it. And a 4-0 win definitely helps you start to get over things. But more importantly, after 30 whatever seconds it was, but the best thing about that was the ball through from Imran to Tom Dele Bashiru, not just a freak goal. It wasn't like one of those goals where someone has a crack from the halfway line and, way, we've scored, brilliant, or anything. It was a worked goal.
It was.
And if you listen to the post-match, you know, what Tom said post-match, you know, he was just doing what he's been told to do, the patterns they're working on. And I think that, as well as the timing of it, just released The release of energy across Vicarage Road was brilliant.
Yeah, palpable, wasn't it? And I think you're right. It was a work move because they almost did it again later in the half, didn't they? Lovely, another ball through from Loser, and Tom Delibashir didn't quite connect strongly enough with the volley for that one. It, I mean, let's be clear. The first half, it could have been 6-0 at half time. But I think you're right, John, to pick up on that first goal, because I think it links nicely into what Jace was saying about the intensity and the movement and just getting the ball forward. And James Morris popped up in the build up to that goal in midfield. He'd already come inside. And then there was a nice little, very, very crisp give and go from Bayo to Loser. He sort of passed the ball and rolled off. And that's where Imran Loser played that amazing ball into Tom Delibashir. And I think it encapsulated really what I think we were hoping to see from Watford, this sort of high intensity, pushing up, everyone getting involved, quick movement. It was what we wanted to see. But as you said, John, we absolutely weren't certain that's what we're going to see. The mood on Thursday night at the live event was very cautious, I think. We were hoping that we were going to see something better than we'd been treated to for the last couple of years, which has been pretty naff. And as Jason said, I can't agree strongly enough with what he was saying, is that the team didn't look like they knew what they were doing. Talented players out on the pitch without really a clue on what they were supposed to be doing. So to see that unfold so quickly on Saturday was joyous, but also I think a massive relief, because it thought, right, okay, it gives the players that little bit of confidence as well, because the sounds coming out of the training ground were that, yeah, we're happy with each other, we're happy with the boss, we're happy with what he's asking us to do. But QPR was still a banana skin, I think. I thought this could be a tricky week. QPR on the Saturday.
Especially at home. Exactly. Especially at home with the crowd who haven't been in a happy place.
Yeah.
Especially with the idea that if they had scored first,
definitely,
it could have absolutely crucified any of the hard work and given a mountain for Ishmael to have to get over.
QPR were rubbish last year. And we lost to them twice. They're a bit better when they beat us at Vicarage Road, obviously. But then we went to their place, Chris Wilder's first game in charge. They were hopeless. I think they hadn't won in 10 or something like that, and probably didn't win in another 5 or 6 after. We turned up and were absolutely abject. So I think there is a massive caveat hanging over this whole performance, is that QPR, certainly in the first half, they allowed us, they just sat off. And Imran Loser's second goal, no one closed him down and enabled him to slot it home.
With that Imran Loser game, my favourite bit was old John, who sits near us. You know, like how fans sort of say things, like, is there, almost like they're giving instructions to the crowd. He sort of goes, "Have a go, lad." And he had a go and it went in. And you can just see the joy in his face going, "I was right. Yeah, I told him and he did it."
and it normally that works the other way. Normally, it does.
Someone said,
don't shoot.
But I do wonder whether that fast start to help set the tempo and sticking to what they've been told to do and getting out there and following their lines. You can only beat what's put in front of you. And I think the longer the game went on, the QPR would have got a foothold in it eventually. They were missing key players. I think their centre-back pairing certainly was anything but their first choice. So a whole long list of caveats, but you can only beat what's put in front of you. And Watford did it, or started doing it, really, really quickly, which, for all the reasons you list, John, for the fans to just relax and get on with enjoying the afternoon, for the players to grow in confidence. Tom Delibashiru has missed a lot of football, as we know, for him to get that goal early on, for those guys, for Bayo to have played a key role in the goal, from Loser, who we think is going to be vital for us this season, to have played that pinpoint ball through, for Morris to show in the centre, that inversion of the fullbacks coming into everything happened that Valerian Ishmael would have wanted to happen within 36 seconds, which was brilliant. And then obviously it could have been 2-0. Bayo had a header. It was quite close, I think, to Asmir Begovic, who was undoubtedly QPR's man of the match. I think if it wasn't someone as good at shot stopping as Begovic has experienced as him, it really could have been 6-7, 8-0. It was a tough chance for Bayo, and then 2-0 Loser scores, and you knew at that stage it was game over, which was helpful for us. But what I enjoyed about the rest of the first half performance was that it was relentless. there wasn't any resting on their laurels. There wasn't any, okay, we're going to score at will here, which was evidently the case. But they kept on working it. They kept on playing to the game plan, and they put QPR to the sword. I think the only disappointment is that it wasn't 6-0 at half time, because it really, really could have been.
That starting 11, you know, Valerian said after the game, those 11 players who started were with us last year. Yeah. It shows a mental mindset change, which again we saw and we loved. But the biggest thing, Jason, was, I suppose, how they're playing. And that's the thing, you know, you can change a mindset, but that's a longer term thing, I think. It takes a loss, a few losses, whatever it takes to really test that mindset change.
But just before you come in, Jace, I just wonder whether Miller and Ismail saying that was a reminder to this lot. Look, you've won this game, but also a lot of you were appalling last year. A lot of you were involved in some dreadful performances last year. So don't get too cocky. Don't relax. We know that you can slip back into that. I just wonder whether there's a little bit of, I've got my eye on you, Lance. I know we know that you're capable of dialing in a little bit. So I wonder whether that's quite a clever...
I mean, he was, I guess, he was right in some ways, but he was also a little bit, you know, there were several players in there who did play last year, but didn't play a massive role last year. Sirauta, Ngakia, Morris didn't play that much at all. Two centre-backs only played half a season. Whatever. I'm not going to have an argument with him. He's too scary, as Eli keeps telling me. But Jason, those inverted wing backs, you know, you went, look where Ngakia is. Look where he's ended up. And he was, you know, where we thought he'd be bombing on down the wing, especially with Ken, especially on the same side as Ken. And Ken not being on his preferred side, he wasn't, you know, you were expecting Ken to have to run down, cut in and cross it over. He did try a couple of times with his right foot. It wasn't the best thing in the world. But those two... are two players, as we said with Tom Dele-Bashiru, who haven't played a lot, and you just feel that's going to be great for them, but they just need more. They need more minutes. They need more time to start developing and pushing on.
I think the performances on Saturday would hopefully mean that they will get more minutes. And it probably helps that, yeah, we played weaker opposition in QPR, because we'd love to play them every week, as we kept singing. And that would sort of ease them into the side, shall we say. But yeah, you think on the performance, you wouldn't want to change it on Saturday. And you looked at the lineup on sort of before the game, and I sort of looked at some of the reactions on Twitter, and okay, Twitter, sorry, X, is not not perhaps a good gauge for what the general world are feeling, but you could see there was a lot of negative reaction to the lineup. And you look at the bench and you see Asprilla on there, sort of players that you think, well, why is he not starting? Why would you have him over some of the players that started, like Dele-Bashiru just coming back from injury? Obviously, Valerian knows best, because it worked very well. Like you say, were they there to try and prove something, or is it a case of, well, Valerian's seen what they've been doing in the friendlies, he's seen that what's been going on in training. Obviously, he's got his way of playing. We talked about how he sort of drilled into them those sort of patterns of play, and are they the ones that have reacted best to what's been asked to do? And perhaps that's why that was the starting 11 that we've got. I thought Sirauta, talking about him playing that CDM role, and again, sort of people saying, oh, what on earth's he doing?
My favourite thing was, about old John being old and all, he said, oh, he's playing first defender. I thought that sounds like a position that was there from, you know, back in the day. But it's what's he doing there? But then what did we see there, though? Is it different with a player like him, who is a what you call a centre back normally, playing a defensive midfielder, rather than what we're sort of, you always think about as a terrier should be that sort of holding midfielder?
You sort of look at the bench, who was on the from the sort of midfielders on the bench, and you had Kayembe there, who could probably play there. You got Livermore there, who did come on and sort of play there, didn't he? And you think, well, okay, he's starting over both of those players. But again, I think it comes down to what he wants out of the movement. So as I said before, you could see at times he was dropping into the sort of back line, and that allowed the other defenders to move forward. So it could be the wing backs both moving forward together, or one of the centre backs coming out. Because QPR started with two up top, I think. I think they had a couple of players playing up time. I think they changed that at half time and tried to sort of make a bit more solid in the midfield. And with them sort of chasing the game from the 33rd second, you can see why they were perhaps trying to do that, which gave us, afforded us sort of space in midfield, but also meant that we just had to be wary, and probably why Sierra Alta was having to drop in quite a bit. And it just sort of gave us that, I guess, like you say, that first defender, that extra comfort blanket, that extra security, if we did need to defend for periods of pressure when we would be up against it, because normally a team will have, no matter how bad they are, will have a period of domination in the game. I'm not sure we actually saw that in the end, but Sierra Alta does provide that, being that first defender.
But he also was a winger at one point, or he crossed the ball in for Bio in the fourth goal. I think,
yeah. And again, it's that movement. That was the best part. Yeah, that was the best part of it, wasn't it? The fact that we got players moving all over the pitch.
Yeah. Well, it was Ngakia to see a router. So again, it just all worked a treat, didn't it? I think everything that Valerian Ismail would have hoped to come off came off. I thought we looked a little bit sticky early in the second half. QPR had made a couple of changes, personnel changes. They had the big chap that came on came up front. It's always difficult to start again in the second half when you've so comfortably won the first half and effectively won the game, going in knowing that really it could have been five, should have been five potentially. But I think when we're looking at the defence, I thought James Morris really looked, he almost had a bit of a strut, the way that he was moving in and looking completely confident there, completely comfortable, following orders, moving into positions which we're not really used to seeing perhaps our young defenders occupy and be useful in. And I just thought the way he patrolled and just looked, his whole demeanour, I thought, was really, really good. And Ngakia did what Ngakia does. I think we saw the best of Jeremy Ngakia, or some of the best of Jeremy Ngakia on Saturday. And I also thought, if I'm being hypercritical, we saw some of what's given us pause in some of his performances. I think sometimes going forward he was a little bit hesitant, and I think with a bit more composure, there's a ball in, I think, that he over, I'm being super critical, but sometimes,
well, I'm going to start a list, rather, because this is, we always have that on this podcast, we always have our attitude, never too high, never too low. I absolutely get that, we've always lived by it. So I'm going to start, it's not a critical list, it's a things to keep an eye on list. So I'm going to put Jeremy Ngakia's thing. But surely most of that comes from, anything you've just said there comes purely from lack of game time, establishing a new squad, new things, rather than from within him. But as I say, let's put it on the things to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think
the other thing we need to remember for Jeremy as well is that he played the second half
other side
out of his natural position. Yeah. He was on the left, wasn't he? So you could probably cut him a bit of slack for that.
Can you do that, Mike? Can you cut him some slack?
Oh, absolutely. I thought he was great. I thought he played as big a part as anyone, as we said, set up that fourth goal, sliding in Francisco to put the cross in for Bayo. I mean, that's a trio of sort of contributions that you wouldn't have necessarily expected at the start of the season. But look,
how many minutes did they all play last year?
absolutely. And I think, look, that we have to, the other thing, I think Jason mentioned it earlier, and things to put on the list to keep an eye on is the solidity of that defence, because I do think they've all, Backman, is his distribution isn't amazing. We know that. He knows that. So they'll be working on it week in, week out, day in, day out, that if he's going to be asked to play that far up the pitch, and he's going to be asked to distribute the ball from his feet like that, he's going to have to work on it. He will recognise that as much as the next man. So,
did you take that more as him, his comfort? Because like I said, he's 100% on the list of things to keep an eye on. But it is him being told, one assumes, to do a role and to play a role he's not used to.
Yeah.
So I understand why it might not be necessarily as comfortable for him. And there were clearly times where he had the ball, a bit of pressure from a player. He probably had two options somewhere, and one, which would be the nicer option, sort of went out of the play, and he would just pass it a bit to feet.
Yeah.
Middle. And it's decision-making, quick decision-making, but that's part of him in a new position. It's a new position. Goalkeeper, it's a new position.
I think it's more the execution than the decision-making. I think sometimes he was hitting balls in too hard, asking too much of the receiver, and they're losing the ball. And QPR were never in, really. They had a couple of sort of half chances where they should have done better. I mean, in the Premier League, we defend like we did on Saturday, and we would have conceded plenty. The amount of sort of possession that we gave away, or the sort of amount of 50-50s that we ended up involved in because of that distribution. And against a real top championship side, I was watching Leicester, for example, Leicester Coventry on Sunday, and Jamie Vardy was there sort of sniffing around, getting the ball, driving on, looking to make things happen. I think if he's picking the ball up from an errant pass, then we're going to be in trouble. But so I think it's the execution, it's the literal passing, and that you will be passing under pressure. You will know that you're passing within the sort of red zone, so to speak. And if you don't hit your mark, you're going to be inviting pressure. So that brings with it a sense of stress, I guess. So passing the ball when you've got acres of space in front of you, and passing the ball when you've got someone bearing down on you, perhaps a couple of players either side of the intended recipient, it's a different kettle of fish. And like you say, John, it's something that he's just simply not used to. He hasn't been asked to do on a regular basis. More often than not, he'll have just sort of got the ball, shaken his head, waved his arm and pinged it downfield. That's what would have happened last year. Well, if we're going to stick to it, that's not going to be a possibility. And let's just see how he goes, and whether they do end up with some sort of hybrid version of it, I don't know. But I think what they'll obviously be doing is just working, drilling him on that distribution. Because I just do think we did look a little bit, and again, hypercritical, I did think we looked capable as a defence of playing ourselves into difficulty. Hurt sort of misjudged the ball a couple of times. I thought Portis had a great game. But Morris, Andrews, and Gakia are all relatively inexperienced one way or the other. And they're ultimately, they're still at this Watford side because of that. And they've all ultimately got mistakes in them, I think. And I think they're all ultimately learning on the job in front of a keeper who's being asked to do something that he hasn't really done historically in his career. So I think you're absolutely right, John. I think we need to cut them some slack. There will be definitely times where we've got our heads in our hands as the ball ends up in the net. It's just going to happen from going from what we were to that. But if the payoff for that is the intensity and movement that we saw, and if they can impose themselves on better opposition than QPR by doing that, then I think as supporters, I would certainly be more forgiving of that. Because as Jay said right at the start, it looks like we know what we're trying to do. And that is so important in the context of last season, where for me, it was just looked like someone had dropped a carton of eggs on the floor. Clean that up.
It almost feels like as we're still sort of in the cricket season, it feels like we're talking about Bazball almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bazball's great, but it has its negative points, and you know you're going to have some disasters with it. And I felt watching Watford on Saturday, I felt a bit same. It looks good at the moment. And I'm sure we will get more good performances like that. But there will be games where it won't work for us and it'll end in defeat.
The good thing is we really ballsed up against bad sides last year. We weren't able to put them to the sword. And I think someone gently chided me on socials at the weekend for sort of bringing it for mentioning that QPR weren't very good. And he said, well, look, we came up against poor sides last year and we weren't able to put them away. And we've come up against a poor side and we've absolutely dispatched them. And I think that is hugely positive. And I think as supporters, most people, from what I can gather, seem to be reading off the same hymn sheet. We're expecting things to be difficult. There will definitely be mistakes. There will definitely be moments that we won't want to be seeing again. But if they can continue in the vein that they showed on Saturday, it could be fun.
Up front, Jason, Bio, Sema and Martins started off. All had, good games. Martins probably shone the most, though, out of those three, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. If we start with Bio in the centre, I'd like to see him given more opportunities. I think there is a player in there somewhere. I think that, and he does score goals. And he didn't get much of a chance. Obviously, there was that instant, wasn't there, where he took a long time to come off the pitch.
Yeah.
when Adeyemo came on and scored, which was, I thought, must have been the last time we saw him. So that, yeah, that wasn't great. And there's a, last year there was a player there that sometimes looks like he wasn't given everything. Saturday, I thought he did okay. I thought there were obviously a couple of chances that perhaps he might have done better. You mentioned the header. There was the
lob,
the opportunity right at the end of the half. Yeah, the lob where we can just assume he was feeling sorry for QPR, and that's why he missed it, but not too. But not
I'll
too
tell
much.
You who I felt sorry for, Jace, was Dave Cameron Walker, who in our WhatsApp group, as you know, not only he ended up backing Bio to score a hat-trick, but he was actually trying to get odds on him scoring a first half hat-trick earlier on in the week, and obviously we all scoffed and laughed at that and didn't give it any credence whatsoever.
To be fair, he wasn't going for that. He said, we joke around, he said, yeah, Bio hat-trick, and I went, you've got to put a bet on that now. You got to put a bet on it, and I think he put £2.50 on it. But, you know, we all felt disappointed when a goal gets missed. He was like, oh, no! Because, you know, he had the chances to make a hat-trick.
First half hat-trick. And I think what you want from your strikers is at least be in the position to score. And all too often, we'll run out of time where we can keep contextualising it by comparing it to last season. But chances, let alone goals last season, chances were at a premium, and yes, QPR tax and all that sort of stuff. I think the fact that Bayo is in those positions is encouraging. He's still got a lot to do to prove that he'd be our first choice striker. But I think just getting into those situations, taking his goal, a difficult-ish chance with the header, probably should have scored the lob. He's there. He's in the right place at the right time, and he's asking questions.
I think as well, because there was his hold-up play as well, and I thought there were a couple of times where his first touch wasn't great, but he had two men on him a lot of the time as well. And I think once he settled into the game, he was actually playing some nice either one-touch pass or first-time passes out to the players that had taken up wide positions. And again, that kind of points to the pattern of play and what he's been told to do. And again, that was quite pleasing to see. So generally, yeah, good, and like to see him get a bit more time. Martins, yeah, I think we got probably what we wanted from him in terms of receiving the ball, taking players on, sort of driving into the box, again, sort of looking to take opportunities when he could. And the goal was probably not what you'd expect from Martins. The sort of near post header. At first, I just thought he'd come off his back.
I think it did,
didn't it? Because of the way the set piece. I don't know if it did or if it did come off. I think seeing replays, I think it did. He did sort of stoop and get the header in. And positioned it brilliantly. Whether he was meaning to do that to actually score from it or just trying to flick it on, because Bayo was coming in and again taking that money away from DCW. if he'd got it right, Bayo would have been there to nod in and would have then scored that third chance, because he would have been full of confidence. But anyway, yeah, the goal was sort of unlike, I suppose, the rest of the performance or what you'd expect from Martins, because of the sort of that near post header. Took it well, but yeah, good encouraging performance from Martins. Let's hope he doesn't get stuck in the under-23s or packed off anywhere else after one game this time.
Simply put, what I love from him, he got the ball, he drove with it. What do you want from someone who's playing on the wing? You want someone to ask questions of the defenders, put them on the back foot, and then see where it goes from there. And I thought he did that, which is exactly what we hoped we were going to get last season, and for whatever reason it didn't transpire. God, listen to me talking about last season. I'm desperately trying to get something negative back. But
yeah, but he didn't get a chance last year. He was sort of behind Pedro and behind and Sarr. So he never got enough of a chances to really do anything.
No. But I was pleased. Just get in the ball and just ask questions. Drive on. Let the defenders worry about you. You're clearly talented, and I think he showed enough on Saturday for us to be hopeful of him playing a big part in our attacking threat this season. I was really pleased, and it goes for really the majority of the players, that everyone that we wanted to perform to a certain level, or to at least get a particular touch or a type of involvement, everyone got something that they could go back into training on Monday or on the warm down on Sunday, whatever it is, how it works, feeling good about themselves, go home, talk to their family, yeah, I did well. I did, you know, feel like they could watch the video and think, yeah, I enjoyed that bit, or I performed to the level I was expected there. I think it felt like that was the most positive thing about the overall performance, was that everyone got something out of it, I think. And Mateus Martins sort of, it almost feels like his second debut, really, for me. You wipe out last year, it was a nonsense, a non-event for him. So for him to come in, and it feels like him starting afresh, and that's what it felt like. It felt like he was sort of announcing himself on the Vicarage Road stage, really. I really enjoyed his performance.
And he's living up to his highlights. I mean, when you have highlights like that in your hair, that sort of dyed hair, you've got to be energetic. You've got to be running at those players. And I think he did that. And Ken, of course, was Ken.
Ken, yeah, Ken was Ken, wasn't he?
Yeah,
Ken was Ken. And like you say, played on sort of the opposite side to his natural foot. Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of times where you checked back and you wanted him to go on. But generally, it was a good performance. When he was checking back, he was looking inside. And again, often there were players to pass to, so it didn't cause us too much of an issue. I felt sorry for him there. Begovic made such a good save late on when he had that chance. That was, great effort. Great sort of run across the box, still taking players on, as we know he can do. We know what an asset he is at that level. And again, he's someone you want to see in the side regularly after that performance.
Work rate as well from Ken is non-stop. He just harries, he hassles. And then he surprises people, I think, with his strength and also his skill. I mean, JC sort of mentioned it is his one good foot, isn't it? And that is, if he did have a right foot, he'd be in the Sweden team week in, week out, and probably wouldn't be in the Watford side. But I just love Ken. I think he embodies everything you want from a Watford footballer. He gives absolutely everything. I think he's a surprise to the opposition more often than not. And the only slight downside is, like you say, JC, he was denied that goal from a wonderful strike from another really good save from Begovic. But that was the archetypal, I think, Ken Semmer performance. And if we get that week in, week out, then we'll be continue to be happy with King. What's better than King?
King Ken. Nothing.
Well, to maintain his crown then as King Ken.
May he reign long and prosperously. The thing is, there was moments where you said, actually, in the your post-match video you did, Mike, on our socials, where you said we hadn't had a pre-season game at Vicarage Road, and it sort of felt a bit like that. And I was watching the clock, I'm going, right, 60 minutes. Those subs have got to come pretty soon, haven't they? Those subs are going to come pretty soon just to get more minutes into the legs and just get more playtime for these new players. And there were three really quick ones, or three in the 66th minute. Loser off Konayon, even though he did actually, it was a little bit of a worry, actually. When he hit the crossbar loser, he ran forward. He then just pulled up a little bit. I went, oh, no, not again. Sir Alta went off and Livermore came on. Dili Bashiri went off, and on comes
Jack Fatadze.
And then later on, Martins went off and KMB came on to sort of hold it up and to secure it up. As debuts go, though, Jason, Jack Fatadze, again, I had that moment of worry from Loser being such an important linchpin of the whole, midfield and, attacking play, with all the goals, in many of the goals. But then when you see a player like that come on with a great energy, in fact, DCW asked, when was the last energetic debut from someone like that? And I said, well, you could only really put down to Cucho, because he came on and really quickly.
And scores.
And he did, who would you compare him to?
A lot of people, a lot of talk seems to be whether he's an Abdi or a Forestieri, hasn't it? And I think a 25-minute, half-an-hour cameo, whatever it was, it's quite hard to identify him with anyone else at this stage.
Well, let's hope he's not a Rinaldi, Jace. That's the other one that people used to go on about. Rinaldi. He came on and did one dribble, and everyone was calling for him to play in every game since.
Or a Xavier Gravelaine. Let's hope he is Jack Fatadze. And we're not talking about him in comparison to other players, and we are talking about him and comparing other players to him in the future. I think his first touch was his first touch, that one where he sort of nuts the QPR player, sort of spun.
Yeah, he did.
Sort of spun all the way around him and then made it and ran on. That was early on in the piece, wasn't there? And I swear there was a point not long after that where He's picked up the ball in a reasonably congested area in the middle of the field, and it looked like he was balancing it on his thigh for about 10 yards. It just seemed to sort of run through with it stuck to his thigh and then sort of came out the other side of this group of players with the ball. It is exciting, isn't it? See a player like that come on, and you've got to hope that he carries on in that vein. As I said earlier, I'm not sure you'd make a case to have him starting over anyone else in midfield on Saturday. Perhaps he'll get a run out at Stevenage. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Might be an opportunity for him to have some fun. But again, you could then, in that case, he would be a good impact player, wouldn't he? Coming off the bench.
Yeah.
And perhaps where we get games where that are a bit tighter, if he can then, he's then someone who can come on and try and unlock a defence with his skills, with his ability. And perhaps we'll see him used in that vein for the time being.
So hungry for the ball, wasn't he? And when he got it, he knew exactly what he wanted to do with it, which was to be positive, confident with the ball at his feet, looking to either get the ball off or to move it forward or to manoeuvre himself into a position to have a shot. He was another one. I think pretty much everyone had a decent strike on goal on Saturday, but he was another one who asked a serious question of Begovic with a really decent effort, probably would have scored on another day. And I think you're right, Jace, the conundrum is with, and as the season moves on, certainly in its early stages under Valerian Ismail, it'd be interesting to see how he does deploy these more exciting players. Of course, he's coming back from injury as well, so wonder whether, well, at least has had a sort of slightly checkered injury history, so whether he is earmarked for that Stevenage game as a way of getting a little bit more minutes into the legs. But you do question how Valerian Ismail is going to use these slightly more exciting players. We looked at the bench on Saturday, and whilst there might have been question marks over the initial 11, what did look strong was the bench. But I commented to my cousin Rich, said, I think we're more likely to see under Ismail, we're all more likely to see Livermore come on than Asprilla, for example.
And I think, okay, yeah.
And I think that probably is the case. But what I think we will look to do is earn the right to bring these players on, potentially, by, you know, working hard, you know, that intensity. I love the way that Matt Rowson in his brilliant match report said, I will use the word, I'll use it only once, let's get it out of the way, intensity. Because I think we are going to hear it again and again and again, aren't we, when anyone talks about Valerian Ismail. We're so happy to talk about it because we haven't seen any intensity for about 6.5 years at Vicarage Road, apart from the opposition. But I think that is the real question for me, is how they're going to be deployed. Because you're right, who would get dropped out of that starting 11? It's difficult to say, isn't it? And then you think about everything we've spoken about, how everything interlocked and worked together, and the movement and the drive and just getting the ball forward, and the fullbacks getting forward, Francisco dropping back in. I'm fascinated to see how he uses him. But what's great is that we've obviously got someone who is, you know, he's an attacking force. He's a weapon for us to use, and that is a really nice problem for a head coach to have, to think, right, I've got that sort of arrow in my quiver, so to speak, and I can draw on him whenever I feel like. If we need to change the game, if we need to step it up a little bit, if things are a little bit turgid, or a team has decided to sit in against us, because whilst this championship, as we said on Thursday, is full of quality teams, there are going to be there games when it's just sort of teams cancelling each other out, quite frankly, aren't they? And I think maybe teams will come to Vicarage Road and look to stifle a little bit, as we will do potentially when we go away. So for having game changers, effectively, and, you know, it's only a 50-minute cameo, 40, well, not even that, 40, 35-minute cameo, or however many minutes it was, I can't add up. It was a short period of time. His Watford career is in its infancy, but it looks exciting. And to have those sort of players who just have that desire to be positive and the ability to back it up, it can only be exciting. And I think everyone who walked away from Vicarage Road, if you asked who is the name on your lips, who's the one that's making you most excited after that performance, I dare say it might have been Georgie Chakvetadze.
The other ones, Jace, of course, Kone came on. We are being distracted by a lovely bright thing in Chakvetadze, but he didn't quite do anything major. Really starts, you know, I suppose it shone a little bit for me that, you know, he is still young. He is still inexperienced. This is, however, what you might be in the future. You're not there yet, mate. So it was really good, I felt, that he got a good bit of minutes in him. But he, I don't know, it just, you know, he, him, all the young players just need more time. They need more minutes. They need to develop, don't they?
Yeah, he's another one you'd like to think would get some time or a starting place in the Stevenage game just to see a bit more of him. And again, he sort of suffered from coming in at the back end of last season when things were clearly slipping away from us in terms of any challenge of anything positive. And we did see some glimpses last season. Saturday coming on late into a game where you're already 4-0 up. There's a congested midfield. You've got a man alongside you who's sort of doing all that running and driving and trickery and taking things on. And you're not going to be as noticed as much as the others. I don't think there was... Yeah, nothing to write home about. Equally, nothing to worry about, really, in terms of the performance. It was pretty steady in what he could do in the short time that he was on.
I wonder whether he might actually be earmarked for more of a starting berth, because he has got that slightly attacking flair to his, well, not flair, that's the wrong word, but it looks like he has got a little bit of attacking potential and desire to be positive with the ball, but also a bit more of a standard midfielder, if that makes sense, than someone like Chakvetadze. And I know we're not comparing the two, but I'm just thinking about who might be staking a claim to feature more in the starting 11 as things move forward. And I think it's really important to remember that when we signed Ismail Kone, he'd hardly played not just any football for Watford, but any football at a professional level anywhere. So this is a guy who is really, really still in the infancy of his career, came in at a bad time last year and will be bruised by that, but I've still got high hopes for him, and I think I think potentially Valerian Ismail might be a good coach for him, someone to really drill some discipline into him, an understanding of the game, an understanding of what's required from a championship midfielder. I wonder whether some time with Valerian Ismail might see him bloom quicker than he might have done otherwise. I've still got high hopes for him. Dave said after the game, we went for a pint in the Mad Squirrel. Thanks again for having us on Saturday and Thursday to the Mad Squirrel. But he still looks raw, and I think we've all echoed that as well. But I'm watching him keenly. I've got high hopes for Kone still, and I just wonder whether he's going to have a pretty significant part to play in this team, in this setup under Valerian Ismail.
We saw so much on Saturday, so much and so many things to talk about. And we've got a game on Tuesday, this morning, maybe, when you're listening to From the Rookery End. We'll see how did he treat the League Cup? Is it just another game, or is it just a good chance to bet in some more players? We'll see. We'll see what happens. And of course, Plymouth, who also won on the weekend, they're coming up. And, you know, the one thing that a new team, a new manager needs is lots of tests and different sorts of tests to see how they can help them develop, I suppose, and take them on. The one thing so any other business, Michael, things that happen at Vicarage Road. Number one, 106 minutes replayed, not 90. Oh no, they're extending football matches now. 106 minutes.
I'm delighted about it. I think it's
more to watch and moan about, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me sharpen my pencil for another. I'm going to need to invest in a new notebook. But we saw last year, I think the Wigan game was the nadir for this for me. I said to someone it was laughable, and they said it wasn't laughable, it was a disgrace. The sort of game management, if you want to call it generously, but it's obviously a game plan just to take time out of the game by feigning injury, by kicking the ball away, by doing whatever. It was a nonsense. It got to the stage with that Wigan game. I'm pretty sure it was Wigan, where it's like, what are we actually watching here? Because this isn't a football match. This isn't a football match that you'd actually pay and go and see. The entertainment level was completely sucked out of it by these ludicrous tactics. Supporters are being shortchanged, and if it had been allowed to carry on, crowds would simply stop going. And I know there's a lot about football that creeps in and that supporters don't like, and ultimately you potentially get used to it and you move on. It just becomes part of the game. But I think this was a bridge too far, because you're breaking up play. For example, Watford could be breaking, or whoever could be breaking, and someone's going down clutching their head. And lo and behold, next thing they're up fine. Look, Watford do it and have done it in the past. You know, Dan Backman had one of his funny moments when he couldn't work out whether he was injured or not. on Saturday, of course. So let's not pretend that Watford haven't done it in their history. But that whole thing about going down with a head injury just to disrupt the play. And then we know that if it's a head injury, the trainers are going to come on. It's not 30 seconds or a minute. It's 3-4 minutes. And it never gets added on. And then when you've got, and that's three substitutions, goalies taking inordinate amount of times. And again, yes, we've had Ben Foster in goal. So we know that we're not guilty of that. The game was becoming unwatchable as a spectacle all too often. So I think this is the correct decision to make, and to leave the clock running as well in the stadium. Little things like this all add to the enjoyment that a spectator can get out of the game. They know exactly how long, because once it's 9 minutes added on, but the clock stops at 90, you're sort of still guessing as to whether, unless you started a stop clock, you're not sure.
Actually, one of the worst moments ever was away at Arsenal. We won 2-1 that midweek game. We were there with a lad called Jack, and he started a stopwatch.
Brilliant.
At the moment there. And we were like, just finish the game. And he had it stopwatch. He kept looking at it. We got 2 minutes. And I said, just put it away. I'm trying to hide my eyes. I don't want to know how long it's been going on. So Saturday was fine. But seeing that clock.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to help me or it's going to just send me mad on a couple of occasions.
And just one other point on it. I did see someone online, it wasn't a Watford supporter, I think it's a journalist did a piece on it, suggesting that on one hand we're being critical of the football authorities for introducing more and more and more football into the footballing calendar, and then we're sort of talking about, well, adding 15 minutes on to games. I think, well, it's a pretty cockeyed way of looking at it, that. And I think what will actually happen is, as the season progresses, the time will come down. Because the nonsense will just stop. Because it's always been a bit of a nonsense, really. If you're winning and you take the ball into the corner and you go down injured or bring a substitution on, the ref's always going to add on a bit. It's always struck me as being a bit sort of self-defeating. But it had got to the level, certainly in the Championship. And I think the argument was that had it been happening in the Premier League, and had you seen some of the stuff you saw in the Championship in terms of time-wasting and game management, in the Premier League, there would have been an absolute outcry. There would have been hour-long specials on Sky and on the whatever. So for me, I'm pleased. And I think my theory is over the course of the season, that will organically come down because players, managers and teams will decide that we don't want to be playing 105, 106, 107, 108 minutes a week. We want to get it as close to 90 as possible. Let's turn up, play the game in the spirit it's intended. Obviously do whatever we can to get the advantage for our side. But ultimately, something had to be done to protect the game as a spectacle, because all too often last time, it was utterly, utterly ruined. So I'm all for it. Positive move.
Jason, are you all for the additional new music that we heard at Vicarage Road? Particularly this one. There's a most but this host. Came at full time. A moose loose about this hoose. As a sort of a different sort of way of saying it. Mr. Ollie Wicken's idea, I believe, suggested to the club. It was a bit weird reaction, but it was a delay from it happening. It took a bit of time from the final whistle before it came on. But of course, there was then slight change at the beginning. And just before the kickoff, there was what I believe was a live version of Your Song by Elton John. Are you vibing those, Jace?
I think so, yeah. You got to love a bit of Elton. And obviously, the last time we had a bit of Elton music, it didn't quite work for us, did it? Whereas this time, we've still got Zed Cars in there, haven't we? So I think the traditional element is still there, with a bit of love for Elton as well, which is good.
They slipped in a little bit of a version of Gangster's Paradise as well, which I quite like. They sort of had a nice sort of dark, brooding, sort of atmospheric vibe to it. So I really like that as well. For me,
when was that?
It worked really well. So it was just before Elton John. Or was it just before? No, it was just before Zed Cars.
It must be. It must have been because I don't
remember. So Gangster's Paradise, Zed Cars, Elton. I think for me, it was quite a tidy little tidy little package, and there's another VT. I mean, this is all feeds into the customer. The customer, dearie me, listen to me. I don't work for FIFA or something. All supports, all adds into the supporter experience. And I watched that, the video, the little video package just before, I guess it comes on at about 5:02 or something like that. I just sat there smiling, nodding my head and thinking, this is amazing. It sort of seemed to a good DJ or someone who curates a festival builds it up as the crescendo arrives, and I think it did a really good job of that.
Talking of the you sort of mentioned the VT, I like the little video that went along with the moose hoofs.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was funny. We'd heard that it'd been suggested, hadn't we? And when it came on, we sort of had that moment of realization. My missus is next to me, and she turned and looked at me and went and just pulled this face. You know, the sort of what on earth is this face? So I had to, I'm right, okay. The video that went along with it was quite fun as well. I was like, people on the pitch, lots of celebrating going on. Yeah, I like that.
It's different. No one else is playing that at full time. A little bit of thought got into it, a little bit of effort, showing all the supporters celebrating up and down the country at the Vic. In the town centre, it was something that's unique to Watford. And yes, people might say a little bit unbiased because Ollie's a friend of ours and he suggested it. But it's something a little bit different. It's upbeat, as you said, Jace. The VT is good, and I think that little package from start to finish, if nothing else, it feels like it's tailor made, if you like, for Watford, for the Watford match day. And it feels like there are connections there. You know, Gangster's Paradise was played before, and obviously there was famously, that was when, unfortunately, Jimmy Davis died on the first first couple of days before the season. So there's little links and nods to Watford's heritage and history, whilst also being a little bit unique and also sort of ramping up the atmosphere a little bit, getting everyone going. Because what was interesting on Saturday was Arlo was gutted because he looks back on football matches and he notices everything in the crowd, what the crowd looks like. He is desperate for when a goal is scored, but he's scored at the away end so he can assess the limbs. He notices all this sort of stuff, and he was looking forward to seeing the whole rookery and the whole ground in yellow. And of course it was raining and everyone was wearing their coats and stuff. But the fact that it felt like it was halfway through the season as opposed to the start of the season. And you combine that with what we were saying earlier about how there's a bit of trepidation going into the start of the season. Having something just to get everyone going again and remind everyone that we're about to watch Watford kick off another season, I think it's all important. A lot of people won't care what the music is. Some people will like it. Some people disagree. I think for me, it was on the money. It got me on the edge of the seat. It got me ready to rock and roll, and it obviously did the trick for the Golden Boys as well.
With the Moose song, I think it's fair to say if we hear that another 22 times this season, then everyone will love it.
Everyone will absolutely adore that song. It'll go straight back to number one on the Apple iTunes, I'm sure. That's to be the first podcast of the season. We're back every Tuesday morning, unless, of course, you're someone like Hanson Ho, who lives the other, in Canada, and he'll get it on late Monday. I know he's going to say something like that on Twitter tomorrow. It will be, ready for your Tuesday mornings, and we'll be recording them on Monday nights. And, of course, if you want to be part of it, you've got time between the end of the game. You can, of course, send us an email with your full thinking, podcast@fromtherookeryend.com. So send us those, and we can use those as part of the podcast on a Monday night. But please do tell your friends that things have changed. From the Rookery End is now all about Tuesday, and we'll be here for you throughout the whole season. So thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you.
And thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. It's good to be back. I didn't know how I was going to feel at the start of this season, but it's exciting, isn't it? It's lovely to have football to talk about, lovely to have Watford to talk about, and lovely to be talking with you boys again. Thank you very much.
Come on, you all!